Right, we're holding on in Beis Amud Aleph. New Mishnah. The last Mishnah told us about one of the things we talked about in Tikkun HaOlam in the previous Mishnah is that you can only collect from Nichsi Yisoimim, only from Ziboris. So therefore, our Mishnah also talks about certain takanas that the Chacham had made for in order to protect the interests of Yisoimim. So we're going to be talking in the Mishnah and in the Gemara about an apotropos, which is a trustee, somebody who's in charge of handling things for the Yisoimim. And there's really three different ways in which an apotropos can get his position. You can have that Beis Din appointed him. You can have that the father appointed him before he died. Or you can have that the Yisoimim on their own found somebody who when they're still children, some chorets of alabais, what the Mishnah calls it. Like they started regularly being Shabbos guests, let's say, by somebody, and therefore, you know, they came to sort of become unofficially members of his household, and therefore he becomes the apotropos. The Mishnah starts off, Yisoimim shasam chorets of alabais, that Yisoimim who are relying on a balabais, so there's no formal apotropos, but they themselves sort of glommed onto him, and he became unofficially the apotropos. Or if her father appointed one, chayev la'aser peritzehem, then he is chayev to take meiser from their fruit in order for them to be able to eat. No, meaning in other words, they have fruit, they have land, which they inherited from their father, fruit, produce is growing on it. He has the responsibility to take meiser in order that they should be able to eat it. Now, I mean, granted, the same thing applies to if he's appointed by Beis Din, but there's no chiddush in that. Of course, if he's appointed by Beis Din, then he has full rights. Okay. Then there's a mission. Now, apotropos, should we know of Yisoimim Yishova? If an apotropos was appointed by the father of the Yisoimim, then later on, eventually they grow up, and he's done with his trusteeship, and now everything is being handed over to them to start managing, he has to swear that he didn't hold on to anything that belonged to them. But if he was appointed by Beis Din, then he does not have to swear at the end. For reasons which the Gemara will talk about on Amud Beis. Abishol says it's the other way around. If he was appointed by Beis Din, he does have to swear. If he was appointed by the father, he doesn't have to. And again, the Gemara will tell us why Abishol holds that way. And the first one discussed what about the case of some choice of Alabayas. Does he have to swear or not? There's a machloikus rishonim on that point. The Ravid and the Ramban and a couple of other rishonim hold that he doesn't have to, because one thing the Gemara is going to mention why one or another apotropos shouldn't have to swear is because if you make him swear at the end, he may just say, you know, why should I bother getting involved in the first place? So that's the argument. If it's some chual shuch, where he wasn't officially appointed an apotropos by anybody, then you could argue all the more so you don't want to. He did them a favor. He voluntarily became the apotropos. Whether it's shem chidim or shem esach with a whole other machloek, but even without getting into that. Without getting into that question, there are some of the Rishonim, I believe also the Ramban, argue that he is indeed considered a Shem Asacha because of the famous Purta Dor Yosef. We learned about it in Subas, I think, the main place the Gemara talks about it in Bava Metzia, that somebody who's taking care of an Aveda, somebody who's taking care of a lost object during that time, Oisik with Mitzvah Potter and Amitzvah, when he's taking care of that thing, to make sure that sometimes it has to be used so it doesn't decay or whatever. At those times, he's potter from other mitzvahs such as tzedakah. In that sense, he's gaining a certain monetary benefit from being a shomer on this thing. Then it's called prutzer to Rabbi Yosef, because Rabbi Yosef who holds that he's a shomer sacha for that reason. So yeah, there are Rishonim who learn that apotropos of Yisoimim also has the same din of a shomer sacha for the same reason. But without even getting into that, even if we say he's a shomer chinam, the argument is, the Ravid's and the Ramban's argument is, that if you're going to make some choice of alabais, and he voluntarily became an apotropos without anybody not based in and not the father appointing him to it, if you're going to make him swear at the end, he may say, you know what, well, why should I bother? And the Ramban, I think it is, even goes so far as to say, if you do make him swear at the end, it's called Mashalim Ra Tachas Tova. It's like he did you a favor, and you're paying him back with evil, like saying, we don't trust you, you got to swear and face it. There are other Rishonim, the Rosh, I believe it is, who say the other way. We say, no, on the contrary, then he definitely does have to swear if he was appointed by the Yisoimim themselves, basically, because we don't know whether he's trustworthy or not. Maybe if Beis Din or the father appointed him, then they can vouch for him, but like this, who's vouching for him? Sigmar says to Ramino, I have a contradiction. You're telling me that the apotropos takes meiser from their fruit. But the Braisa says, Atim v'lo shutfim, when the Pasuk says you have to take truma, implies you, but not shutfim, meaning if you have partners, one of them can't give truma on the other one's portion without his pass. Which, mind you, the Rambam doesn't pass in that way, because there's a Mishnah in Trumas that says that Shurfim can take Trumah, and the Rambam evidently holds that that Mishnah contradicts our Braisa over here, and fine, the Halacha is like the Stam Mishnah. There are various Rishonim talk about the possibility, maybe you can reconcile them, maybe you can reconcile the Mishnah and the Braisa, but okay, we'll
why don't we say that the Trumas is actually like that?
We haven't gotten to Shurfim, we haven't gotten to the Trumas yet, wait. We're recording the whole Braisa. Atim b'lei shutfin, atim b'lei arisin, also you, but not an oris, a sharecropper, can't take maisa without the balabais's approval. Atim b'lei apetrupin, and when it says atim means not apetrupus, because after all, it doesn't belong to him, it belongs to the assignment. V'loy apterim, a stranger shaloyin, in general, not someone who's taking truma from something that's not his. Which means, it actually says this isn't a fourth category, this is a category that includes all those three, the shutfin, the oris, and the apetrupus. Why can't any of them take? Because it's not theirs. So an apostrophus can't take my sister. So what are you telling me in the Mishnah he's supposed to? Amar of Chista, lo kasha kan l'hachel kan l'aniach. Not a contradiction. Because our Mishnah is talking about he's taking my sister in order to feed the assignment right away. Necessarily he has to take my sister because he can't feed him tevel. The other one is talking about, the Braisa over there is talking about l'aniach. So Rashi explains l'aniach means that he'll take ma'aser from the produce and then put it in the granary or in the storehouse or whatever. So then, don't do that. They're not gaining anything from that. May as well leave it tevel, let it stay in the storehouse at tevel. When they get older, they can take maaser from it, or before they're going to eat it.
So the mitzvah for them?
So the Ramaphorshim will point out that there is, first of all, let them get the mitzvah of doing it themselves when they become older. Second of all, there's also the Tovas Hanah involved in it. They should be able to have the benefit of deciding what Kohen or Levi is going to get it.
But it's not his
mitzvah to do. It's not his mitzvah to do. The Rambam, by the way, has a different shita on Kan Lahaniach. He says the Rambam goes so far as to say that this apotropos, if the produce from these Yisoyim's field has been harvested and now Maaser has to be taken from it, if it's for the Yisoyim to eat, then yeah, you take Maaser before you give it to it. If it's going to be sold in the store in a marketplace, then no, don't take Maaser from it. Sell it as tevel, and let the buyers take Maaser from it. There are not even argues on that. What are you talking about? You're going to sell people pebble and then be machshel them? He says that no, l'haniach would mean if it depends whether, he says that it's somewhat similar to Rashi, that it depends whether you're putting it away for now or for later.
It's okay if you put it for later,
then don't take maaser from it. Right. Leave it as
sell it.
But if you sell it, the Raiva would argue, yeah, of course you have to take maaser from it, because how can you machshel other people? Yeah. Bahatanya, and indeed we learn in the Braisa, Hapatrupin terminum machin lahachu v'loy l'aniach. That Hapatrupin can take truma and maisu in order to feed the assignment, but not to set it aside. The first one, by the way, discussed the question. If we said that Atim v'loy Hapatrupin, that the politics, there's a cost of that Hapatrupin can't take, how are we saying that when they're going to be feeding the assignment, they're supposed to take it? How do they have the ability to? A few different answers, including that maybe it's only an asmachta, maybe on the contrary, maybe it's only an asmachta, midaraisa, they could, the rabbanon don't want them to if they're going to be l'aniach, but they'll allow them to if it's l'hachil. Or another possibility is because hefker based in hefker, so therefore, if they're going to be feeding to the assignment right away, then based in will give them the ability to do it, even though midaraisa, they might not be able to. There's one other possibility that Ramban talks about, the possibility might be allowed because Zafin Ladim Shalom Bafanim. So it's not even a matter of Shlichus. Atem is where we learn the whole concept of Shlichus. So fine, this guy doesn't have the ability to be a Shliach because the Yisoyimim or Ketanim, they don't have the ability to appoint him a Shliach, but Matab Zafin Ladim Shalom Bafanim, that he could do. Continues the Brai. So, Moichon Lahem Behema Avodim Rishfachos Batim Sodas Akramim. The Apotropin can sell on behalf of the assignment. They can sell animals or slaves or maidservants or houses or fields or vineyards. Again, Lahache Lavalai Laniach. It's all when they're going to give the assignment food out of this money right on the spot or other needs of theirs right on the spot, not to put away as an investment. Because again, it's not really in their interest. What if the money gets stolen? Or Rashi points out, there's also the matter of shvach ve'savin. So it's more, it makes the family look better when they have estates or slaves or what have you that they inherited from their parents that they still have in their possession. So as much as possible. So if you're just selling it, so keep it unless you actually need the money on the spot. Yeah. Again, they can sell on behalf of the Yisraelim fruit for wine or oil or flour from what was produced from the Yisraelim's property. Again, to give them to eat now, not to set aside for another time. The apotropin are responsible to make, or to buy, or to use money to buy on their behalf of lulav and arava, a sukkah, tzitzis, the chodavash yesh lekitzva, anything that has a fixed amount that you're supposed to do, which the Gemara points out, the yisuri shofar, that comes to include also a shofar, if they need, or if they can't be yotze with the tzibbers.
So that's the Mefarshim say,
because Mela, Lulav, and Adrava, you can't expect them to borrow somebody else's Lulav or whatever. It's anything with Tzitzis, it's Chovas Gabra. Or now, okay, technically, it's Chovas Chepta, but whatever. The point is, if they're wearing something that's Chayiv and Tzitzis, it has to have Tzitzis. Shofar is not necessarily something that needs to be bought from them. They can hear with the Tzibur or whatever. If there's a situation where they need a shofar of their own, then go ahead and then that's why the Braisa didn't mention it explicitly. Continues the Braisa. V'loy chalim sefer Torah tefillin and mezuzah. The apotropin can buy on behalf of the Yisraelim a sefer Torah tefillin to learn from. Tefillin and mezuzah. Incidentally, just that we're mentioning tefillin over here is a number of achronim bring this as a source. There's a minhag that some people have that a yosim starts putting on tefillin early. Most kids, you know, there's different minhagim in the world, whether they start putting on a hat by mitzvah or a month or two before, like we put on 2 months before or whatever. There's a minhag out there that you send them start putting it on earlier. Some of them say that's based on our Gemara over here, because why else would you mention that they buy them tefillin? Once they're 13, they're already gedolim, they don't have an apotropos anymore. And again, any other such mitzvah that has a fixed amount, there's a known time and place and amount that has to be done, which again, the Gemara points out, the Yisuri Megillah, it comes to include a Megillah for Purim. Again, the same idea, I didn't mention Megillah explicitly, because lav dafka, they need one of their own, they could be Yotze with the Tzibur, but if they need one, then yeah. However, in Poskin Alein Tzedakah, however, based in, or the Apotropin, don't impose a certain amount of Tzedakah on them to give, because there's no limit to that. There's always aniyim. You can't assess them for pidyon shvuyim. The loy kol davar she'ein lekitzva or anything else. But there's no fixed amount. Which again, the Gemara points out, the yisuri tanchumi avelim. That comes to include nichum avelim. Nichum avelim. We're talking about it here. Obviously, it's not just going to be. No, we're not talking about it. Yeah, obviously, to go be menachem avol is not something financial. But the minhag of tanchumi avelim in those days was that it also involved bringing them food. Whatever, so that's a job of shame like kids, but there's no fixed amount, there's no specific amount you can say that they're of food, and there can be many available out there. So yeah. But those, no. With that said, by the way, the Gemara does point out in Bava Basra, you are allowed to assess your sermon for tzedakah if you're doing it for the sake that this way they should get well known in the tzibur, that they should start developing a reputation. So the Gemara gives an example over there that I think was Rava assessed a certain Yisomim to give tzedakah in order to make for them a name in the community, yeah. Because that's in their interest. Continues the Braisa. The apotropin are showing modern lochel velizkis v'nichsi Yisomim. The apotropin are not allowed to go to a din Torah to lose or to gain on in the property of Yisomim. Why not to gain? Ella, what it means is lochel v'manach velizkis. It means they can't. It means they can't go to be chayav in order to be zoche. So what does that mean? It means Rashi says like this. It means that it's a one-way thing, basically, it's a one-way street. If they go to a din Torah, if they win on behalf of the Yisraelim, wonderful, they won. If they lose, we say sorry. You can't make the Yisraelim pay on behalf of just because you didn't come up with the right arguments or whatever. We're still going to set aside the judgment. The other guy is not going to be entitled to collect until the Yisraelim get older, and then we'll relitigate the situation. That's how Rashi learns. The Rambam learns not like that. Among other things, the Mishnah Melech, I think it is, says on the Rambam, because it's not right to say that. What are you saying, basically? Therefore, the other guy, what is he going through the deterrent for? He's guaranteed to lose. Either he loses right on the spot, or he loses in that he can't collect on it. You can't do a deterrent that way. So rather, what it means is that the Rambam doesn't explicitly say this cash, the Mishnah Melech says it, but the Rambam, therefore, based on that idea, the Rambam explains what it means is that the apotropin are not allowed to go to a din Torah. They're not allowed to go to a din Torah when what is it exactly? when there's a chance that they could lose. If we know that's a sure deal, they're going to win, then yeah, I think that's how, I think that's how the Rambam says it. Continues the Braith. The Ain Apatrupin are showing Limka Barachas the Ligo Bakarta. The Apatrupin are not allowed to sell property that's further away in order to buy property that's closer to the city, even though that's more convenient. Still not. Barav Ligo Bayafa, or to sell a lower quality field in order to buy a higher quality one. My time. And the Gemara says, why not? Dilma Mishtadfin. Because, like this, you're buying a different piece of property. What happens if that new piece of property ends up getting damaged by weather or flood or what have you? Like this, if you had still kept, if you had still kept the old property, then their investment would have been safe.
You know the old property.
Not so much you know it better, but like this, the fact is, if they didn't have this new property, their investment would have been safe. Like this, you're sort of at fault. It's not really at fault. It's an act of God, but still, you made it possible to happen by going and buying that field, which ended up getting damaged. So therefore, in other words, basically leave well enough alone.
Never buy a field.
But you can't say I'm going to sell this field that they own now, which is far away from the city, and therefore it's a hassle to take care of, in order to buy a closer one.
Because it may get damaged.
And actually, the Maram Shif points out the Lashon Ligo implies that we're not even talking about, I mean, on the face of it, you could have a different issue. You buy a field, later on there could be an error. Somebody else could claim that this field was illegally taken from me. And even when it's Ligo, even when you're buying back a field, Ligo is the Lashon of the Kosser, the garlic, Geula, Tialoi, like the Parshas Bahar, it means a field that originally belonged to you. So we're talking a field that originally belonged to their father and then was sold, and now they're buying it back. But there's no possibility of error, but there still is a possibility of shidofa and of damage to the field. So therefore, don't. The ain after tripping are showing limkos sardis for lika chavadim, and after tripping are not allowed to sell a field in order to use the money to buy slaves, because a field is a better investment. The slaves eventually die. Fields don't. But you can do the other way around. You can sell slaves and use the money to buy fields. No, you can't even do that, to sell slaves and use the money to buy fields. Why? My time of Dumalimashakyan, because they may not be calmly in his hands. In other words, there may be an error. Still, when you're buying a field, again, there's always the possibility of an error. Somebody's going to come and claim, wait a minute, this field legally belongs to me. Is it illegally in your hands? Like this, when you're buying a field using the money from Avadim, then you're putting the Yisomim's money at risk.
They didn't have
money. Yeah. Well, there is, to a certain extent, there's a chayos. When you buy a field, you usually buy with a chayos. It's basically title. It's not really title insurance, but it's insurance that you'll get reimbursed. Fine, but it's still a hassle, and it's still the possibility that the Yisomim will suffer a loss out of it. The apatrupin are not allowed to free slaves. The meaning, in other words, Rashi says, we're not even talking about, obviously if he's talking about losing out of it, if he's freeing them for nothing, then of course not, he doesn't have the right to do that. But even if, for example, a slave wants to buy his own freedom, somebody else gave him money, again, like we learned last week, I'm an ashrein l'rabchot v'shusbahen, that you're on condition that your master doesn't own any part of this money, and therefore you can use it to buy yourself free, so the same are not losing out. Nevertheless, you can't. Rashi says the reason is because after all, the Apatrupin don't own the Avadim themselves, therefore they don't have the ability to be Meshachar then, to free them. Other Mefarshim give other reasons. But what they can do is if the slave wants to buy his freedom, so what do? Sell them to somebody else, which that way they have the money, they can use the money for food or to buy new fields or whatever. And then the other one, instead of the slave is going to give me the money and free himself, let him give you the money and free himself, so you're not losing anything. Rebbe Omer, Rebbe says so. No, Omer Ani, actually I say, no, actually the Eved, if the Apotropos is able to sell the Eved to somebody else, then he's able to sell them to himself. So the Eved can give his own money, the Yotze, and then he can go free. But Neshul commercial laws, because it's just like you're selling the Eved to himself. So if you can sell him to others, you can sell him to himself.
The Eved can sell himself.
Not the Eved can sell himself. The Apotropos can sell the Eved to himself, meaning that he takes the money from the Eved. Now you bought yourself, means you're free. And the Braisa finishes off. The tzarech l'chashiv imayin, and I'll finish it off, and then it continues. The tzarech l'chashiv imayin v'achroina. The apotropos has to make an accounting at the end. Meaning, again, when the yesonim grow up, you have to make an accounting of all the income and of all the income and outgo that was done. So Rashi says he would also have to swear that his calculations are correct, that he didn't take anything of his own. Other Rishonim learned that no. I mean, that would be the same machlokas we had in the Mishnah between the Chachamim and Abishol. We shouldn't assume that the Baita, which now mentions another opinion, Rav Shimon Gamliel and Sarah, but Rav Shimon Gamliel says you don't need to swear. It's not logical that they'd be redoing the same machlokas as the Chachamim and Abishol. So no, according to those Mepharshim, it's not a question of whether you have to swear or not. It's just, do you have to give an accounting at the end? That everything was done, that everything was that you can account for, that you can actually show them on a piece of paper to the assembly. We're talking about once they get old enough. Eventually a person reaches a point. Eventually a person reaches a certain sophistication in money matters. So do you have to actually show them a piece of paper with a calculation or a Shem Gamil Lemay and Sarah, but you don't need to. And you knew the Braita. You cannot make as an apotropos women or slaves or children. The reason is because they usually don't manage these kinds of things. Noshim don't usually manage these kinds of things. Avodim are not trustworthy. Things. Avodim are not trustworthy. Ktanim don't really know their way around business. But if the father of the Yisraelim appointed a woman or a slave or a cotton as an apotropos, then fine, he's able to. The father, given that the father appointed this person as an apotropos, then fine, that's valid. And the Rashba points out, on the face of it, there's no chiddush. Of course, if the father did that, then it's fine. The point is, we don't say that Beis Din should override him and say that those aren't good apotropos. If the father chose to appoint such a person as apotropos, fine, let it stay that way. I'm going to tell the case. Now that we're finished with the Braisa, let's talk about some specific cases involving apotropos. There was a certain apotropos in Reb Meir's neighborhood. He wanted to sell land that belonged to the assignment and use the money to buy slaves. And Reb Meir didn't want to let him because the Braisa said you can't do that. So then Reb Meir was shown in a dream. I'm trying to ruin things for them. You're trying to build up. So what does that mean? Basically, it means that he's being told you're doing the wrong thing. Now, why is that?
How? Right. He's trying to ruin it.
He's trying to benefit them by not having the money used to buy a avodim, which is a riskier investment than fields. Avodim can run away; they can die, whatever. However, someone is coming to him in a dream and telling him that I'm true. It's telling him I'm trying to ruin their affairs. I have to live now. He said, why are you trying to build them up? So various proportions talk about the possibilities. It could be that the money over here that the father had left them came from illegal things such as ribis or gezel or whatever, and therefore the Eivishter wants them to end up losing it. Or it could be talks about maybe on the contrary, maybe the children are bad. Maybe the children are bad. They're going to grow up to be Rishoyim, and therefore the Eivishter would rather that they don't have this wealth. However, nevertheless, Reb Meir did not pay attention to that dream. What you see in a dream is neither here nor there. I mean, there are many cases throughout Shas where a dream has certain significance. When it comes to matters, financial matters in Halacha, generally we say that in fact they don't have any significance. You ignore them. You're being told the money came from illegal sources. Okay, not my problem. If we find that it did, then we can talk about it. But not just based on a dream. If it's the Rabbi Yaakov Emden says, if it's that the children are Rishoyim, okay, maybe they're Rishoyim. They may have children who are Tzaddikim. They may have grandchildren who are Tzaddikim. You can't take it away from them because of that. And then Yochin, it's a Lashon HaKosik. Yochin the Tzadik Yovosh. That a Rosha can prepare something and the Tzadik ends up wearing it.
Maybe so,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Another, since we're talking about a story with Reb Meir, the Gemara tells another one. Hanu Beit Shei, the Igri Behu Satan, there were two people, a couple of Hashras, that the Satan was getting involved between them. The Chol Be'Shimshi, every Vena Shmoshes of Erev on Friday night, Habakkuk Mintzu Ba'adi Adori. They were arguing together. Igri was Sotin means that the Sotin was Igri literally means like he raced them on. How would you say it in English? He provoked them. The Sotin provoked them, and therefore every Erev Shabbos, the Vena Shmoshes, they would be arguing with each other. Not so funny. Igri the mayor lahasim, so the mayor came to that place. Akvinu Tlosa Beishimshi, he kept them by him for three consecutive Friday evening Bein HaShemoshes, 3 weeks in a row, Ad Avad Lohu Shlomo, until he made peace between them. Shamed Ka'omer, and then he overheard a voice. Akvinu means he actually he kept them by him, like he kept them in his house, talking. No, Bepashas means Akvinu who? I mean, Loshes Hiroshon Zabim, then.
He kept them busy
at that time, yeah. Akvinu means he was active then. He held them back. So maybe, I don't know, he invited them to his house for a chat, whatever. Yeah. Abdul Abdul Shlomo until he was able to make peace between them. Shamed Ka'omer, and then he heard of sound saying, by the Abdul Rab Meir Lahu Gavra Mebesi. Ochen Ve, the mayor, got that person, meaning me, out of his house. Meaning he heard the voice of the Sultan complaining, look at this, now I have to have this comfortable place over here, and now the mayor kicked me out of it.
Is it the mayor of Al Mass?
Yes, Couple of interesting things on that, by the way. Somebody says a vote, that is why we say Shalom Aleichem Friday night, specifically, because Friday night is one of those times when there can be a great deal of friction, everybody's in a rush to get things done before Shabbos, and therefore Bedafka is the time when we ask for the Malachim of Shalom to come and visit us, rather than, like in this story over here. Reb Levick has a whole deep explanation about it. Kabbalah, one thing he points out is the 3 weeks over here symbolize the 3 weeks between Shavuot and Tammuz and Tisha B'Av, which are a special time of Gvuras and friction and arguments and whatever, and therefore Dafka, those 3 weeks that a mayor made sure to make peace between them, and that got rid of the Sultan. Somewhere, when I was a kid, I read a story about from Chaim Ozer's father-in-law that there were people in his neighborhood. There was a rich lady who used to take in Shabbos very early. So she'd light her Shabbos candles as early as possible in the afternoon, like Plaga Mincha. Everybody else, meanwhile, is hurrying, is rushing to try and get everything done before Shabbos. And there was one particular couple over there. Every week, the husband from this poor couple would see those Shabbos candles in the window, and he comes home and he starts yelling at his wife that everything's not done yet. And every week after week, there'd be a problem with it. So what does this Rav do, Rav Chaim Moses' father-in-law? That one Erev Shabbos, he sits out on his porch smoking his pipe until as close as possible to Shabbos. So this way, okay, people see the candle. Well, it's almost Shabbos. The Rav over here is sitting smoking his pipe. It's not Shabbos yet. We can relax. Gemara says, another case, Havu Apotropos, to have a Bashir of Rusi, to Rabbi Shurban Levi. There was an Apotropos in Rabbi Shurban Levi's neighborhood. Have a Kamaz bin Arab Azabin Todi. He was selling land and using the money to buy oxen. Rabbi Shurban Levi didn't tell him that there's any problem with that. Now, why not? Because Savalak Rabbi Yezi, because Rabbi Shurban Levi held in this regard like Rabbi Yezi. Ishti, I never called my wife Stam my wife, and I never called my shur my shur. I always called my wife my house because she's the akeres habayis. She's the mainstay of the house. Well, the shuri sodi, and I always called my ox my field because a shur is the main thing. It's the main thing that makes a field worthwhile, that you can use a shur to plow with it. So therefore, when he's using the money to buy a shur, that is a valuable thing on behalf of the assignment, much more than I've loved him, and therefore you can't object to that. Another case. Hanu Yasmi to have a smichi gabi ahu ha'isavta. There were yisomim who were samuch by a certain old lady. So that was the example we had in the mission over here. This old lady had not officially been appointed an apotropos by the father, let alone by Beis Din. They themselves had kind of appointed her on their own. Havalahu tursa. Now they had a cow. Shakla v'zivinta ni'alar. So she took that cow and sold it on their behalf. Also, Kruvin Lachamed Rav Nachman, so the relatives of the Yisraelim came to Rav Nachman to complain. Omer Lemaya Vita, Dizabna, what's she doing selling it? Who made her an apotropos to have the right to do such a thing? Omer Lahus, he tells them what's the problem. Yisraelim Shasamchoyt Avalabayitznan. The Mishnah tells us that you can have a case in an apotropos that was unofficially appointed like that the Yisraelim themselves glommed onto her. So fine, that's her right.
Because she was named by the
Yisraelim themselves, yeah. So they asked him, what about the fact that now this cow has gone up in price? If she had waited, she could have sold it for a higher price. Like this, she made the assignment lose. He answers, "Du shusse de lekeach, Yaker." Okay, but it went up in price after the lekeach already bought it. So in other words, it's not, she didn't sell it. We're not worried about, it's not that we're worried she should have waited to sell it. They're arguing she sold it cheaply. The answer is no, she sold it for the fair market value at the time. The price went up later, she can't control that. Okay, they asked, dummy. Yes, but actually, in this case, she sold it on credit. The assignment don't yet have the money in their hands. So in that case, they should be getting the higher price. So we have like this. We know the concept that usually when you're selling the talithin, you have, the money exchanges hands, but money doesn't make the kinyan, meshicha or agbar or whatever one of the valid forms of kinyan does. The Gemara has a machloikas. So in Bava Metzia, the Gemara has a machloikas on the subject. First of all, is it minat Torah that way, that dvar Torah mois koinis? Is it minat Torah that meshicha is what makes the kinyan? Or is it that Rabbi Yochanan says over there that no, minat Torah, the exchange of money is what makes the kinyan? But the Rabbanan, for reasons that we'll talk about soon in the sugya, Nisfu Chetech Abaliyah, we made a sakana that instead Meshicha or some other form of Kenyan makes the thing official, and neither one can retract. One more thing is, it's when money has changed hands, but the goods have not changed hands yet, so when the money has been paid, but Meshicha hasn't been done yet, at that point, we're saying the Kenyan hasn't been done yet, therefore either of them can change his mind. However, if either of them changes their mind at that point, they have to accept on themselves a curse called Misha Parah in Beis Din. They go to Beis Din, and Beis Din administers a curse, Misha Parah, the Eidishter who paid what they deserve to the people of the Dera Mabul and the Dera Plaga, the people of Sudan and so forth, will pay a person who doesn't keep his words. And then that's it. By reversing the deal. And then the money is reimbursed and the thing stays by the original.
Which price did
it? So let's say, for example, so somebody sold a watch to somebody else for $10. So Reuven paid $10 to Shimon for the watch. Before he has a chance to take the watch, the price of it has now gone up and now it's $12. So Shimon would like to be able to say, I want to renege on the deal. I'll give you back your $10. I don't want to sell the watch to you because I can find somebody else to sell it for $12. Since Meshicha has not been done yet, he can, but he'll have to accept that Misha Parah. Conversely, if it was the other way around, if the price went down to $8, and Reuven says, let me have back my $10. I can go find a watch like that someplace else for $8. He's able to do it. There was no Meshicha yet, but he'll have to accept Misha Parah.
And the sellers obligate the buyer to make
Meshicha
on the spot?
No. I mean, Meshicha can't, no. If it hasn't been done, it hasn't been done.
It cannot be a condition. Of
no. So the next dozen or two dozen lines of the Gemara are going to deal with various angles on this. So, in this case, this old lady, who was the unofficial apotropos for the assignment, sold this cow on their behalf. The price has since gone up. They haven't received the money yet. So he says, in that case, in that case, then we have to apply here the din that Rav Chani Loi Bar Idi said in the name of Shmuel. The property of Yisaimim in this regard is considered like the property of Hekdesh. The kinyan takes place when money changes hands, not Meshicha. By Hekdesh, the din is, if you want to quote, throughout Shas, more quotes the pasuk, but not an akesef for kamloi. It's actually not a pasuk with those exact words, but it's a substance of a couple of sukkim there in Parshas Bechukah. Said that as soon as the money is given, when you buy something from Hekdesh, when you makdish something to Hekdesh, and then you buy it back from Hekdesh, as soon as you give the money to Hekdesh, the kinyan is immediately chal before any meshicha or any other regular form of kinyan. Same thing over here. Then we're saying that when it comes to Yisraelim, the same rule applies. Only when the money changes hands is there a kinyan. Therefore, even though the buyer already did Meshicha on the cow, since he didn't pay yet, then yes, the Kinyan has not taken effect yet. Yes, the Yisraelim would be able to change their mind and be able to say, we want the cow back, we can find somebody else to sell it for a higher price. Good. They could, that's what we're saying. They have the din like Hekdesh.
After Meshicha?
After Meshicha, that's what we're saying. Meshicha was done, but Kesef wasn't done yet.
They still have, you're not Meshicha.
Right. So now the Gemara is going to go. the point of nothing. I mean, the point of Mashiach, usually that would make a kinyan. In this case, money has to be paid. If Mashiach was done, no money was paid, then you don't yet have a kinyan. Just some more examples. Chamre d'Rabbana Ukva Yasna, the wine of Rabbana Ukva, who was a Yasim, I guess when he was younger he was a Yasim, later on he was called Rabbana Ukva. Mashchua Barba, somebody bought it and did Mashiach on it when the price was 4 zuz, for a barrel or whatever, Barbar, for 4 each, the yakter, then the price went up, become Mashiach, and now it's worth $6 a barrel. Mashiach Shisa. Also become Rav Nachman, so they came to Rav Nachman to ask what the din is. Again, it's the same din. So again, as long as money has not changed hands, the kinyan is not complete yet, and therefore, yes, they're going to have to return the wine, and the Yisraelim can find somebody else to sell it to for $6 a barrel. So, let's go through all the various possibilities. Moshuch Perim Yasmi Yakur, if the other person, the buyer, did Meshicha on fruit, which they're buying, or whatever, goods that they bought from Yisraelim, Iyakur, and then the price went up, then okay, that's when we apply the Chanelai Ba'idi's din, and we say the Kinyan has not taken effect yet, and the Yisraelim are able to take it back. Mashiach is not enough. And also Mepharshim talk about they won't have to accept the curse of Mishapara, because they themselves, the Yisraelim, they're Tanim. You can't expect them to accept such a thing on themselves, and the Apoturpus it doesn't belong to. So therefore, there's no Mishapara here either. With the Parah and the Savta and the Parah and the Chamra. Iyakur. Now, what about Zoyl? What happens if the other way around? What happens if the price went down and now it's the sell? So now the Yisraelim have bought something from somebody and they did Mashiach now the price went down and the other person wants to say, you know what, then not Mashiach. If the Yisraelim did Mashiach, there's no price. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, the Yisraelim did Mashiach. Then we say, Lo Yehei Koyach Hedyat Chomer Mehekdesh. You can't say that an ordinary person has a stronger right than Hekdesh, since when it comes to a Hedyat, once Mashiach is done, then that's it, you can't take it back. So therefore, in this case, Mashiach was done. Certainly you can't say because Yisraelim, you should have more right. The seller, since Yisraelim...
Not here.
No, this is the other person. The
from the Yisraelim.
Yeah. The Yisraelim did Mashiach. Somebody else sold something to the Yisraelim. They did Mashiach. You're right. So far we're talking about somebody else buying from the Yisraelim. You're right. So if the price went up, then the Yisraelim have the right to take it back, like some of what you say. If the price went down and the other person wants to take it back, one wants to go back on the deal. No, lo yehei koyach hedyat chomer mehekdesh. Given that if it's hektish, you wouldn't have the right to, because Mashiach was done, because kesef was done already. Here Mashiach was done already. Moshe Peri miyasmi. Somebody else, the other person, did the Mashiach. In an ordinary case, if they were buying from a hedyat, they wouldn't have the right to take it back, because they already did Mashiach. How much more so if they're buying from Hekdesh, or in this case, from Yisraelim, that they don't have the right to go back? Imshichu lehu peir liyasmi. What if
can the Yisraelim come back?
That's the next case. Imshichu lehu peir liyasmi. Now what happens the other way around? The Yisraelim are buying peiros, and the moicher had them do Mashiach. So the Yisraelim did Mashiach, but they didn't yet give the money. Then imshichu lehu peir liyasmi. If somebody else sold to the Yisraelim and the Yisraelim did Mashiach, then iyakir, then if the price went up and now the seller wants to renege on it, then again, lo yehei koyach hedyat chomer mehekdesh, then we should say again, they don't have any stronger rights than they do with a hedyat, they don't have a stronger right with hektish than they do with a hedyat. So for the, given that the Yisraelim already did Mashiach, that's it, the deal's done.
So the deal wasn't done with...
We were saying we give the Yisraelim or hektish the benefit in both ways. Mashiach is enough because it's good enough by a hedyat, it's good enough by a hektish, or Yisraelim. But kesef by itself is also good enough.
What's the
way? Zul. No, it means either one. But Zul, one second, what happens if the price went down and now the Yisraelim want to say, you know what, let's give you back the payrus and we'll go buy payrus cheaply someplace else. sovereign mina hainer of Kaniloibar Idi. So they thought to say, they thought to say there you apply Rav Kaniloibar Idi's case, since you involve Yisovim over here, then Kesef by itself makes a Kenyan. However, Omalahudab Shisha Pedir Abidi, no, Harahi Vididu. No, because this comes out to be a detriment to them. Zimnid the mitzvah to the payri, because it can happen that they need food, the less of the yod will not be yabi zuzi, and nobody's going to want to give it to them on credit without them paying cash on the spy. So therefore we should not, for the benefit of the Yisraelim themselves, we should not allow them to take it back. Let them that way in the future they'll be able to buy on credit.
So we allow the Yisraelim to keep it when the price goes up, and we're not allowed to.
We always try to look for the benefit of the Yisrael, basically, what it boils down to.
When the price goes down, after Yisrael bought it,
then we say, let them keep it, because we want them to be able to buy on credit in the future. Yeah. More cases. Yabi Zuzi Yasmi Aperi. What happens the other way around? There was no Meshicha. Up till now, we were talking about there was Meshicha. Now we're going to go the other way around. The money was given first. If the Yisraelim gave money for the payers, Zoyl, so if the price went down, again, you can't say that a Hedyot has stronger power than Hektish, given that the other person is dealing with Yisraelim over there, therefore they're not going to have the right to take it back. Yaker, if the price went up, they thought again to say that we should apply the Chaniloi's rule, and we should say that the Yisraelim are allowed to take it back, but again, you can argue that in that case that would be to their detriment if they're not able to go back on it. Because the other person may say, look, you made a Kenyan with money. At that point it's yours. However, before I had a chance to deliver the wheat to you or whatever it is, a fire broke out and everything got burnt. So therefore, it's in their interest to say that the deal should not have been considered to go through yet. That they shouldn't have a kinyan on it. That's the Gemara discussed in Bava Fia, but they're horned of Yechanan. That Miatorah, Mois, Kornis, and the whole concept of Meshicha and so forth is only Dirabanan. The reason for that is because of the Nisrufu Chitzchan Baalia, because we want to give the seller an incentive to give them an incentive to save that wheat or that produce or whatever, rather than saying, it's not my problem, I already sold it. There is, by the way, a machlokes rishonim on the question, if a taka gets burnt, who's the one who has to take the loss, the buyer or the seller? Rashi points out over here that if there was a fire, we taka would say that it doesn't belong to the seller anymore. We would say, in other words, that the deal's already gone through. If we were to say that the Yisraelim, once they gave money, have already been considered that they bought it and that's that, then we would say the loss is theirs. And that's why we don't want to do that. That's why we're arguing that not. The Baal Amar argues differently, though. He argues that the loss actually would be to the seller.
It has nothing to do with the delivery of the wheat.
No, that's what we're saying. The reason why the Chachamim made a Takana of Meshicha is precisely so that way, if the wheat is still in the attic over there and a fire breaks out, the guy is going to know, wait a minute, I don't own it yet. I still own it. I better go and save it, otherwise the deal's going to fall through. The other guy gave money, but he hasn't done Meshicha on it yet. Meaning he didn't take delivery yet. Therefore, it's still in my possession. Therefore, I better work hard to save it, so that they don't end up reneging on the deal. Actually, the machlokes between Rashi and the Baal Amor is not so much whether you're allowed who gets lost, but are you allowed to renege on the deal if there was a fire, after all.
Are you?
That's the thing. You have.
If there are Yisraelim, you cannot.
No, never mind Yisraelim. Never mind Yisraelim. We're talking in an ordinary case. If money changed hands, but the goods have not yet been delivered, and there was a fire, can the lekeach at that point say, you know what, there was a fire, therefore, you know what, never mind, let me have back my money. I there's no wheat because it's burned already. Can he say that or not? That's machlokes. Another case, what happens the other way around? Somebody else paid the assignment money for their payers, iyaker, so now if the price went up, and the Yisraelim want to be able to take it back. so that they can sell it someplace else more expensive. Again, we can argue that the other guy wouldn't have the ability to do that with a hedyot, therefore he doesn't have the right with hekdish.
Exactly.
Yep. Zul, what happens if the price goes down? We thought to say that again we apply Rav Chanan Loi Bar Idi's case. Again, hold on with the Jew. Again, that's going to come out a detriment to them. Because again, it can happen in money. The lesser the Yov, the Avalu Peri. Nobody's going to want to give them money until they actually deliver the Peris. It's the inverse of what we said before, that we want them to be able to buy on credit. The flip side of it is we also want them to be able to sell on credit, so that the money will be given now and the payers will be delivered at some later date. So we want to be able to preserve that ability, and therefore we want to be able to say that in that case the person will have the ability to go back on it. If only money changed hands and there was no Meshicha yet, in order that in the future they'll be willing to do deals with Yisoyim and pay them the money ahead of time and then take delivery later.
So in this case, the Yisoyim would lose?
That's the point. We're saying we always want to preserve the interests of the Yisoyim, but sometimes that means allowing them to take back the deal, sometimes it doesn't, all depending on we have to consider not only the short term right now, we have to consider the longer term, whether people are going to want to do business with them.
So in which case are you signing not allowed?
So for example, this last case, we had several cases, but one of them was this last case. Somebody else paid them money. They didn't yet get delivery of the payers.
And the goods went down.
The price of the goods went down. So now the other person says, you know what, let me have back my money. I'll go buy these payers someplace else. We're saying that you should allow that to happen. Don't apply to Hanaloy's din that once money changed hands, the Kenyan is done already. Because then nobody's going to want to give them money ahead of time in the future. And what happens if they need money on what if that happens if they need cash on the spot? Maybe you can't say that Hektish needs money on the spot. But here we're talking about as far as the assignment themselves.
What's lending money?
We don't want to sell it, buying and selling.
So
that's the point. Think of it. Would you want to pay somebody ahead of time for goods where you know later on the price may change, the price may go down. You could at that time when you actually need the goods, when the goods are supposed to be delivered, you could buy them cheaply elsewhere, but tough luck, you're already locked in at the higher price. You're not gonna want to do that in the first place. You're gonna say, you know what, I'll wait and I'll buy from you when I actually need the wheat. Like this, we want to make it that the Yisraelim are able to get cash on the spot when they need it. So therefore, we want to make it. Therefore, we want to still preserve that the other person has the ability to go back. He may have to accept me shapara, fine, but at least he has the ability to. Gemara tells Amar Ravashi, Anover Rav Kahana Chasmin and Ashtara the image is the Iriyasma. Rav Kahana was Ravashi's Rebbe. We signed together on a shtar of the mother of Zeira, who was a Yosim, Debezabna Arla Targa. She had sold land in order to pay taxes. Targa specifically means head taxes. Without making an announcement. Usually when you sell real estate of the Yosim, we learned about this in Subbot, there's a whole process that has to be followed, and particularly you have to make a public announcement of it, a public auction of it for 30 days that this piece of property is going to be sold, and that way people will bid up on it. That way it will sell for a high price. In this case, she sold it without any such announcement because there was no time. In a private deal, there was no time because the taxes needed to be paid. And Rav Ashi is saying that Rav Kahana and I signed off on that. It's just the stuff is Rashi says we're talking about that this was tax that the Yisoyim owed. Tosfos says maybe not. Actually, it could be that it was talking about taxes that the Ishul Bonos, that they're not the Yisoyim themselves, but after all, out of the estate, the widow is supposed to be supported. The daughters, as we learned about yesterday, they also have taxes to pay. So it may have been there. So even though it's not directly for the Yisoyim, but it had to be done out of the estate, so therefore also it could be done on the spot. The Amri Nahadoi, because in fact the Chacham of Nahadoi say, Lakarga or the Mazoni or Lakura, for taxes and for Mazonis and for burial, Mizamnin and Boyachras, in all those cases we sell property without any pre-announcements like that, so there's no time. Tertius points out, L'Kvoda, we learned about this in Xubas, L'Kvoda obviously doesn't mean where you need to bury the guy on the spot. Of course you can't leave him unburied for 30 days. We mean, let's say, so they buried him on, they borrowed money in order to bury him and do a funeral or whatever. Now they need to pay back that money. It's true, I mean, the guy's already buried. On the other hand, so on the face of it, there's no rush. But nevertheless, because they borrowed for the purpose of the Kvoda and we want to pay that back as soon as possible, therefore we allow it to be done without a Charazda. Another case, Gemara says, Amram Sabah, that was his name, Amram the dyer, he's the dye cloth for a living, Apotropa the Yasmihava, he was an Apotropos of Yisraimim, also Kulim and Mechamed Rav Nachman, the relatives of the Yisraimim, came to Rav Nachman for a Din Torah. Ah, so that's Rishonim talk about that question. Let's learn what happened over here first, and then we'll talk about that. Also, Kloven L'Chamedi Rav Nachman, so the relatives came to Rav Nachman to complain about him. Amrile, Kolovish Machasim Yasmi. He's dressing himself using money out of the Yisraimim's property. How is he allowed to do that? Amalahu says, okay, that's reasonable. Kiyechid, Vashtaman Mili. Fine, he has to wear a nice suit in order that when he's going to do business deals on behalf of the Yisraimim, people will be willing to listen to him. And they say, Ka'achol B'shasim, he did who? Okay, but he's eating and drinking out again out of the money of the Yisraimim. V'loy Amud, and he's not rich. He doesn't have, we know he doesn't have this kind of money. He must be taking it from the Yisraimim. Amalahu, not Amalahu. Amur. So he has an Amur Metziah Ashka. Fine, but you could say that maybe he found a Metziah. Maybe he has money from that. Okay, they say to him, Volkham Mastid, but we see he's actually damaging the Nechasim of the Yisraimim. Rashi gives examples, he's not taking care of the properties, he's cutting down trees. Amalahu, in that case, he says to them, Aisili Sadi, in that case, bring the Aedus, the Mastid, that he is ruining the property, Vasokine, and then I'll fire him. So Vasokine means I'll fire. Rav Nachman is saying that the Beis Din will fire him. So this is where Rishonim talk about. Are we talking about that he was appointed by Beis Din, or are we talking about he was appointed by the father of the Yisraimim?
Yes.
No. I mean, we had in the Mishnah the question of who appointed them, but in this case of here, when we're saying that if he's ruining the property, that we should dismiss him, is that only if he was appointed by the father? But if he was appointed by Beis Din, then they knew to begin with he was trustworthy, and therefore we should give him the benefit of the doubt. Or maybe not. Even if he was appointed by Beis Din, maybe he went bad. The Machlokes was referring on that.
What's the difference? As long as he went bad.
Because that's the question. For example, when we say over here that we see that he's eating and drinking more than we know he can afford, should we immediately assume that he's taking from the Yisraimim, or should we assume, like Rav Nachman said, maybe he found the Messiah? That may depend. If he was appointed by the father, maybe we should say, okay, you know what, the fact is, we don't know what kind of person he is. Fine, the father trusted him. We don't know how trustworthy he is. Maybe he is indeed illegally taken from the Yisraimim. Let's not assume he found any Messiah or any such thing. Whereas if he was appointed by Beis Din, maybe there's more reason to argue. Look, Beis Din vetted him before they appointed him. Therefore, maybe we should assume, without solid evidence that he's doing wrong, We should keep him on until we have solid evidence in the form of aid.
Let's say in the first scenario when the father was not the big. So why? I mean, he's not trusted. So what is?
No, but that doesn't. Father trusted him, fine. But how do we know that he? That we don't know that he's trustworthy.
Yeah.
No, so that's the point. So if we see, therefore, that he's eating that he's eating out at expensive restaurants every day,
right,
maybe we shouldn't assume that he found a Messiah. Maybe we should assume that he's illegally taken from the assignment.
And fine, what are we going to do?
And fire him right away. As opposed to, if he was appointed by Beis Din, maybe we need to wait until we have actual solid evidence that he's misappropriating funds from the assignment.
Why don't we do a discovery process?
And that's what we're talking about. We're saying bring aid in with the
press. Firing him.
Firing him, as I said, I should be sadi, bring aiders. But that's what we're saying. Do we need aiders, or is it good enough that we have that's the question. Is it that regardless who appointed him, you still need evidence before you can fire him? Or is it, it depends. If the father appointed him, then you can fire him even without solid evidence. If the Beis Din appointed him, you need solid evidence. That's the fact is, there is such a machlokes. The Amar Rav Huna Chavrin Meshmedurav, because in fact, Rav Huna, our colleague, Rav Huna was Rav Nachman's colleague, said in the name of Rav, Apotropos de Maxim Mesokinim, an Apotropos who ruins the Nechosim of the Yisraimim is to be fired. The Itmar, because in fact, we have a discussion on that. Apotropos de Maxim, Rav Huna Amar Rav Mesokinim, so Rav Huna says in the name of Rav that they fire him. Dvei Rav Shila Amri Loi Mesokinim, in the yeshiva of Rav Shila said they don't fire him right there on the spot. Maybe they warn him first, and they need to collect evidence, whatever. But the halacha is we do fire him.
And he owes the money?
And whether he owes the money, maybe not. That may depend how solid a claim we have against him. But at least he's fired so that he can't cause any more problems.
Right, but as a result of the investigation, so
then... It depends what the investigation turns up. If they find out that he actually misappropriated funds, then yeah, he's going to have to repay it, sure. Okay, the Mishnah said, Apotropos should we know Rabbi Yisayim Mishava. That's the Apotropos was appointed by the father of the Yisayim, then he has to swear at the end when he hands it over to them. My timer. He loved it. I have an Apotropos. Because the fact is, why is he agreeing to be an Apotropos just based on the father asking him to? Because it must be the father previously did him some great favor. Therefore, he's willing to do it. We're not worried that he's going to say, wait a minute, but I'm going to have to swear at the end, therefore I can't be bothered. The fact that the father did him such a great favor, that itself will be enough of an incentive to have him be an apotropos, and he's not going to worry about, but I have to swear. As opposed to, if he was appointed by Beis Din, which is the next thing, we know Beis Din La Yishava, Milsa da Al-Mahu da Ovid L'Beis Din, because the Chachamim and the Mishnah figure, in that case, it's like he did a favor for the Beis Din, and they asked him to be an apotropos. He's not gaining anything from it, but he was willing to do it. The E Romis Alei Shvur. So if you're going to tell us that he's going to have to swear at the end, Ofili Nui, he's likely to say, you know what, I can't be bothered.
Okay. Why is he gaining by the father, and he's not gaining?
Because by the father, according to this way the Chachamim look at it, the father must have done him some great favor. So he owes the father one. Therefore, he's willing to do that, even if in the end he's going to have to swear a Shvur. As opposed to if Beis Din appoints him, what's he getting out of it? Nothing. So therefore, he may figure it's not worthwhile. Abishol and Mechilu Fadvorim, and Abishol says the other way around, my timer, Minu Beis Din Yishava, if Beis Din appointed him, then we say he should swear, because Bahi Hanah, Jekanafik Alei Kola, the Inish Mehem Nahu, because he has the Hanah, that now he has a reputation in town that he's trustworthy. Does Samach Alei Beis Din, because the Beis Din is willing to trust him to be an observer. Mishum Shvur, I also leave Nui, therefore, just because he has to swear a Shvur, he's not going to avoid being an observer because of that. Minoah, be Yisraelim, but if the father appointed him, lo Yeshava, then Abishol says you should not have to swear. Milsa ba'almohu da'abiladzadi, because, okay, they did favors to each other. It's like they were friends, that's all. There's no real Hanah involved. The Romis, the father and the apotropos. The Romis, the Shvur. So if you're going to force him to take a Shvur, Asilim Nui, then he's going to avoid, he's going to say, I can't be bothered. The halacha is like Abishol, and Tosfos says that actually that is the final halacha, even though the Gemara is going to bring a braisa that says the other way around. We learn in the Braisa that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says both of them have to swear. And give me just 1 minute. And the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. So Tosfos points out, even though the Braisa tells us the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, the halacha is not like that. The halacha is like what Shmuel said. Turn it up to Chlif Abama Rabba Kameh Rabba. Apotropos Sheminoa Vyasem Yeshava, Mneshu Noisa Sacher. So Rabba Chlifa teaches a Braisa in front of a Rabba, then an apotropos that was appointed by the father of the Yisem should swear, Mneshu Noisa Sacher, because he's a Shema Sacher, because he's getting paid for it. What do you have, like one measure that you're measuring everybody with? Who says an apotropos who was appointed by the father is getting paid for it? No, rather you should say because he's like a noisesacher. He's like he's getting a schar from it. Either the prutah of Yosef that we talked about before or the hanah that we said that he got a hanah from the father.